We talked about suffering last time. And God doesn't want us to suffer. I mean, we're built in our bodies. We're not built to suffer where there's pain. Now, pain is sometimes useful because if you don't have pain, you might keep doing something that really wrecks you, really hurts you, really destroys you. So pain sometimes is our friend telling us, hey, don't do this. You know, if you pull your arms up, and you know, there used to be a thing on Hee Haw. The guy said, doctor, it hurts when I do that. Then he said, well, then don't do that. So we want to stop for pain. We want to not have pain. And we tend to seek pleasure. And one of the things that causes suffering is breaking of God's law, which we saw that. But worse than that, I mean, God himself punishes. He punished Israel. He punished, took Israel captive. The Assyrian Empire took the 10 northern tribes. Several of the prophets announced that, told people you're being evil and God is going to punish you for this evil. And they continued, and God sent this nation of Assyria and took the northern tribes captive and took them out. And then we had the southern tribes, called the nation of Judah, the tribe of Judah, and they were taken out. And there's plenty of suffering in war. Trust me, plenty of suffering. I'll mention some of this later. But evil people, God evidently he's given us free will. And I don't know how you can explain. I know some people that think that everything, you know, the world is under God's control. This is God's world. I hear that that song. We think this is my Father's world. What do you mean? Let me explain what's happened in this world. We know that in the 1940s, in our lifetime, in my lifetime at least, many of you are not that old to remember it, but and some of you are, the Nazi Empire, the Nazi government went after the Jews. They began to say the Jews were responsible for all the sufferings. And all of a sudden, they came. They went wherever they went, they gathered Jews out. Hitler hated the Jews and he wanted them dead. And it was a mass exodus to exterminate this class of people. If you were born a Jew, you were under tremendous threat of your life, of your liberty, of your existence. And they went after and they wanted to exterminate them, shoot them, kill them, destroy them, gas them, whatever way they had to do it. They killed 6 million. This was in the 1940s. Okay, so you say, well, the 1940s, that was brutal time. That was World War II. It was definitely brutal. Yes, it was definitely brutal. But was there anything brutal after the 1940s? Oh, sure. In the 1970s, a communist regime took over Cambodia, called themselves the Khmer Rouge. And they began to exterminate Cambodians. Anybody that wasn't what they wanted in the way they wanted it and the kind of person they wanted, they killed them. They killed 1.5 million or more Cambodians. Actually, Cambodia was not a real large country, as you know. It's not like the United States. They didn't have that many millions, but they killed off 25% of all Cambodians at that time were killed by the Khmer Rouge. I think it was a movie called The Killing Fields out about that. Telling about the horrible killings that they did for no reason other than they were not, you know, whatever, maybe all sold on communism or whatever it was. The Cambodians were exterminated. This was in the 1970s. Then you say, well, that was in the 1970s. Now it was the 40s, it was the 70s, but now modern time in the world, the world is a lot better. Really? Really? Look at this. In the 1990s, there was the Rwanda slaughter, the genocide of the Tutsi people. Now, you had a couple of tribes there. There are more than those, but these were the dominant tribes in Rwanda, the Hutus and the Tutsis. Willa Hewlett, my good friend there from Oklahoma, recommended a book to me a number of years ago called Live to Tell. I read it. It's fascinating. It's in one sense fascinating. In the other sense, it's gripping, and it's emotional, and you can just feel the way she lived. Live to tell. She lived. She was a Tutsi girl that lived to tell about what happened in Rwanda. And they were barely saved finally by the French. They came in and tried to save them and stop that slaughter. The Hutus got in control and began to say things about the Tutsis. And what happens is you blame a certain group of people for all the troubles. The Jews, Hitler blamed the Jews, okay? And the people there became said it was the Tutsis. They're problems. Now, the Tutsis evidently, I don't know, well, they had more talent or they had more intelligence or whatever. They did very well, and now said you blame them for everything. You can see somebody who does well, and you think that person doing well, that they caused you to not do well. No, they didn't cause you to not do well. You're not doing well because you're not doing well. Now, unless that person came over and stole from you, why is he causing you not to do well? And there are some people say, well, he beat me out. He was his competition. He was smarter. He did this. He got the job before me. Well, okay, make yourself better. Do something else. There are all kinds of opportunities. But what happened was that she described how they began to say on the radio, she got in class and began to see that people are starting to look, and the teacher's talking about, well, Tutsis are this and Tutsis are that. Next thing you know, she began to see more and more, and on the radio broadcast, they started broadcasting about them and turning people against them and saying that they are the problem. They are the problem, and we got to do something about it. And this is nothing but evil. And I don't know how to explain between 500,000 and over 800,000 people were macheted, slaughtered. Anyone they found a Tutsi, whether you were nice or good or sweet or bad or good looking or ugly, or whatever, chopped them in half. And people drove down roads in Rwanda, and they at night they thought it was bumpy. But they were running over dead bodies all over the place, bodies that were killed, slain. They just left them out there. That's evil. You could say it's our Father's world. Now, how do you account for that? How do you know, this is war or things? What if we did this in the United States? What if one political party turned against the other political party and said, the reason we can't get for our programs going is because that other political party. And I heard one comment was talking about those who voted for a certain person for president should be put into a basket of deplorables. Now, a deplorable is a person so bad that you have to put condemnation on them. If you said this apartment building is deplorable in its conditions, it deserves condemnation and criticism. You don't want one political party starting in on another that saying the fault of all of our problems is because of them. That's very dangerous. And thankfully, we live in a society that might not do that, and we have guarantees in our constitution. Our constitution. You can't turn one political party to say the other political party should be wiped out. No, we need two parties. Hitler said no two parties. There's only one party, and that's Nazi, the National Socialist Party. That's the only party we're going to tolerate. When you get into that, you have very, very bad situation. A one-party system is terrible. Well, how do you account for all this evil and suffering? The Jews that suffered, the losses, the people, the agony, and so on. When I sing the song, "This is my Father's world," I don't mean the societies of the world. I mean the creation of the world, the beautiful mountains, the stars, the clouds, the grass, the flowers, the trees, the birds, the animals. I believe that is my Father's world. I don't believe that this evil is my Father's world. That God is not controlling everything. If he did, what kind of God do we have that would let people die like this? So I think in terms that, in fact, there were early Jewish communities that said, no, God has turned over the world to the evil powers. And evidently, the Apostle Paul must have accepted that and thought the same way, because you remember in the book of Ephesians chapter 6, he talks about we don't fight against flesh and blood. We're warring against the spiritual powers and principalities and evil spirits in high places. That's our war. It's not against human beings. It's not the other person didn't do it. The society is controlled by Satan's powers. And Satan, you know, when he looked at Jesus and took him up on this high mountain and looked over the lot of the world, I don't know how far you could see at that time, but he says, I could give you all these nations if you fall down and worship me. And Jesus said, get out of here. You should worship only the Lord your God, him only. So again, war, evil, destroying people. Assyria took the 10 nations out. Babylon then came against Judah. Now, they had been warned. Jeremiah warned them over and over. And finally, they said, well, no. And Jeremiah finally said, look, it's not going to do you any good now. You have to surrender to the king of Babylon because he's coming. God has said it, and that's going to happen now, and there's no way God's not going to change his mind. So here's what happened when Babylon finally broke in. This is the book of Jeremiah, chapter 39. Let's read here. Was there suffering here? Absolutely. He takes them captive. There was much suffering, killing, and destruction. In Jeremiah, chapter 39, verses 1 through 8, it reads like this. Now, when Jerusalem was captured in the 9th year of Zedekiah, the king of Judah, in the 10th month, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and all his armies came to Jerusalem and laid siege against it. They blocked it. They stopped it. They came in. You can't come in. You can't go out. No products are coming in. No foodstuffs are coming in. We're laying siege against it. We're going to bang it in. We're going to hit the doors and so on. We're coming in. In the 11th year, okay, it started in the 9th year. Now we're in the 11th year of Zedekiah. In the 4th month, in the 9th day of the month, the city wall was breached. They broke through the city wall. They broke over it. They broke through it. Now they're coming into Jerusalem. Jerusalem had walls around. It still does. You'll see some of the walls of Jerusalem still there. And you could see places where, you know, it's built up on a high place. And, you know, it was done to protect them at that time. Now we have planes that fly over a wall. But then in those times, a wall was a very good protection. So they came in. They breached the wall. Then, verse 3, then all the officials of the king of Babylon came in, sat down at the middle gate, okay, called Nergal-Sarazir. And some of these people came in, they sat down, he tells all their names there, I'm not going to try to pronounce it, and all the rest of the officials of the king of Babylon, they all came in, and now they're officials, we're taking over. When Zedekiah, the king of Judah, and all the men of war saw them, they fled. Let's get out of here, they're coming in, these are the officials, let's get out of here. And they went out of the city at night, by way of the king's garden through the gate between the two walls, and he went out toward the Arabah. So here he goes. He's flying, going down toward Jericho in that area. But the army of the Chaldeans pursued him. Now they say, hey, they're trying to escape. Get them. They went after him and they overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho. And they seized him. They brought him to Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, at Riblah, and in the land of Hamath, and he passed the sentence on him. You try to run from us, okay, this is what's going to happen to you. So they passed the sentence on the king Zedekiah. Then the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes at Riblah. Riblah. R-I-B-L-A-H. The king of Babylon also slew all the nobles of Judah. You're a high official, you're a noble, you've got some kind of big credentials. Bang, kill them all. But for Zedekiah, we're going to kill your kids right in front of your eyes. Now, I don't know about you, but that would be enormous suffering. To see your children killed right in front of your own eyes and there, and you can't do anything to help them. Daddy, mom, and even though they're adults, they might be adults, they might be teenagers, they might be young adults in 20s. Doesn't matter. When's a good time to lose a child? Never, never a good time. So he killed the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. He then, after that, verse 7, this is Jeremiah 39. He blinded Zedekiah's eyes and bound him in fetters of bronze to bring him to Babylon. Now, Babylon, just Assyria and Babylon, they didn't want you staying in their country. They exit you. You got out. It's hard. It's hard to then have what do you call it, guerrilla warfare in your city, because you're not there. They take you out of here. You have nothing to fight for. You're gone. The Chaldeans also burned with fire the king's palace and the houses of the people, and they broke down the walls of Jerusalem. Here they are, tearing them down, break them down, bash them in, and they broke the walls. Suffering, hurt, loss of property, loss of life, loss of your whole way of life is gone, just like that. It's gone. King of Babylon took it out. Jeremiah chapter 52, we read beginning in verse 8, but the army of the Chaldeans pursued the king, just like we read in the other, and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho. And all his army was scattered from him. He had nothing to fight with. He's all by himself, the king. They got him. Then they captured the king and brought him to the king of Babylon at Riblah in the land of Hamath. And he passed sentence on him. The king of Babylon slaughtered the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. And he also slaughtered all the princes of Judah in Riblah. Then he blinded the eyes of Zedekiah, the king of Babylon, bound with bronze fetters, and brought him to Babylon and put him in prison. King, you're the king. Look what happens to you in just a very short time. You're the king of Judah. You make all the rules. You make fun of Jeremiah. You put him in the stocks. You got power. You're Zedekiah, right? And now you're a prisoner. You're blind. You saw your kids. The last thing you saw out of those eyes was your kids being slaughtered right in front of your eyes. And now you're in Babylon in prison. And that's where you stay. You know what prisons are like? I'll tell you, they are not like the king's castle. They are not like the king's house. They are not like the sumptuous things that the king can have for himself. No. A prison. prison is bread and water. A prison is meager things. You don't get, you're not at the Four Seasons Hotel when you're in prison. Not at all. You're hurting very badly. Now here we have Psalm 137. Psalm 137 is a psalm about the people who went to Babylon and were captured. Somebody wrote this psalm in Psalm 137. It goes like this. So you probably have read it. There was a hymn years ago. It goes like this. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down and wept. Now, the rivers of Babylon were the Tigris and the Euphrates. These are the big rivers, not the little river of Jordan. The Jordan River is not a big river. You know, it's more like a creek, you know, that we used to call in Pennsylvania. That's a nice creek, you know, it was coming down. So here it is. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down and wept when we remembered Zion. Now they're thinking back to their homeland. They're thinking back for the time that they lived in Zion in peace. They're thinking back. And they've got to think back of Jeremiah's words. They've got to think back at the warnings of the prophets that told them, you're not living up, you're turning away from God, you're bringing on all these idols, and you're worshiping these gods of the other nations. You're turning away from God, and you need to straighten up. But no, now they're in Babylon. There we sat down and wept when we remembered Zion. Upon the willows, in the midst of it, we hung our harps. For there our captors, now some of them took their little musical instruments, we hung our harps. For there our captors demanded of us songs, and our tormentors mirth. Laugh it up. Let's have some good music. Let's get some happy music here. Laugh it up and play these songs for us. Our tormentors demanded of us mirth and happiness, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. Sing us, you guys had some nice music. Sing us one of your old songs. Verse 4, how can we sing the eternal song? The YHWH is song. In a foreign land. How are we going to sing songs of going up to this temple, going up to Jerusalem, going up to have the feast? How can we sing songs of praise for God in the temple that God was there and so on? How do we sing these songs? If I forget you, though, it's not like I'm going to forget Jerusalem. If I forget you, O Jerusalem, may my right hand forget her skill. May my tongue cling to the roof of my mouth if I do not remember you, if I do not exalt Jerusalem above my chief joy. Remember, O Eternal, against the sons of Edom, okay, the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, R-A-Z-E. R-A-Z-E means tear it down to the ground. And it's not R-A-I-S-E, you raise it up. It's raise it, R-A-Z-E, raise it down. Break it down to the ground. Raise it to its very foundation. O daughter of Babylon, you devastated one, how blessed will be the one who repays you with the recompense with which you have repaid us. And then you have this, how blessed will be the one who seizes and dashes your little ones. He's going to be, the word blessed doesn't mean blessed in the sense that God's going to give him favor. It means happy. How happy is the guy who's going to go against you like you went against us? One day you'll get yours, as Jackie Gleason says, against the rock. He will dash your little ones against the rock like you killed our kids. You killed our kids, right? And Zedekiah's kids were killed right before his eyes, slaughtered. And a lot of the kids were killed. A lot of the young people were killed. Devastation. War is suffering. War is suffering. Just like crimes. Crimes are suffering. You're a nice person and you get mugged or you get shot. I remember one of our church members telling me in Akron when I was there, he said, I was shot in the stomach. He opened the door and this guy shot him right in the stomach and destroyed part of his liver. It hit him on the right-hand side of his body and destroyed his liver. He had to go to the hospital, but thankfully his liver repaired. He recovered and he was okay, but he suffered. Now, was it his fault? No. Did God make somebody do it? No, I don't know. I think it's free will. People have, they can decide good, they can decide bad. God doesn't decide everything. God doesn't control over what the Khmer Rouge did or what the Nazis did or what the Hutus did. No. Crime. That's an evil that people do to other people, innocent people. Now, sometimes God can turn an evil event into something good. Now, you know the story of Joseph. Joseph, the favorite son. You know, he was sort of a smart aleck guy. You know, he was a Jacob's favorite son, but he had these dreams, you know, You know what he did? Well, I dreamt that all of you would be bowing down to me. I dreamt that all of you, that my star was, you know, whatever I had was higher than yours, and I was the one that, above you. And, oh, they hated him because he was so, you know, smart aleck. So what did they do? They decided they wanted to kill him first. And then Judah said, why don't we just sell him? Why don't we sell him to caravans going down to Egypt? Let's sell him and let him go. So they did. Now, was he beat up? Yes. Did he suffer in the caravan? Yes. You know, you don't get one of these caravans going down there and they put you on a nice seat. You walk and smack you and they buy you. They're going to sell you. They're going to sell you when they get down to Egypt. So he suffered. Joseph suffered. And finally, You know the story. Joseph, everything he did turned out right and so on, and except that, you know, he was too good and he was evidently good looking. And then Potiphar's wife wanted him, and he was under one of the officials, and the official was gone. This official said, I'll turn everything over to you. Make it right. Make me prosperous. And Joseph did. Everything he turned his hand to made this guy prosperous. And then the guy's wife fell in love with Joseph or lusted for him. And all of a sudden he tried to get him. And he said, I know, you know, she said, you can sleep with me. My husband put you over everything. He said, he didn't put me over you. And then I'm not going to do this. So he didn't do it. And finally, he was thrown into prison. She accused him of trying to rape him or something and molest her. And so they took him and put him in prison. He was there for 2 years. And during that time, he had this skill of being able to interpret dreams. And he interpreted dreams and they came right and they were correctly done. And all of a sudden, he knew when the Pharaoh started having this, there were people in jail with Joseph. They got out and he had dreams he couldn't do, and they finally got the word from these guys, hey, there's a guy in prison that was really good at interpreting dreams. He knows what these mean. So Pharaoh says, well, bring them to me because I'm disturbed by them. And you know the ones he had these 7 ears of corn and of beautiful things, and followed by 7 ears of really rotten corn and things that didn't develop well, or the grain didn't turn out well. When they say corn, they mean grain. They don't mean a corn cob like we have. We call it corn. It was an old English word for corn. It means grain. So what they did, he saw 7 years of depleted plants. They're drying up. They're not doing well. And he said the 7 cows, you know, and then the 7 very fat cows and 7 very thin cows. And finally, Pharaoh says, you know what to do. He says, you're going to have 7 years of great things and you're going to have 7 years of very little. It's important for you to save it. So he put Joseph over everything. And after Joseph then, you know, it's a very emotional story about how he finally shows himself to his brothers. He wants Benjamin brought back. And finally, they bring Jacob down, and everybody's there. And the brothers are always worried he's going to do something to them. And in the chapter 50, after Jacob dies, it said, after he had buried his father, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers and all who had gone with him to bury the father, his father. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph bears a grudge against us? Now, the father had told Joseph, don't bear any grudge against your brothers now. You know, what if Joseph bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong which we did to him? They knew they did wrong. I mean, he suffered for what they did. You know, people suffer for wrong acts by someone else. I think it was Jean-Paul Sartre said, hell, his definition, hell is other people. And sometimes that's true. Other people cause distress, their wrong actions, their wrong deeds. So here he says, what if he turns against us? So they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father charged you before he died, saying, this, thus shall you say to Joseph, please forgive, I beg you, the transgression of your brothers and their sins, for they did you wrong. And now please forgive the transgression of your servants of the servants of the God of your father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. But Joseph said to them, do not be afraid. Am I in God's place? Am I God? No. As for you, here's the statement. You meant evil against me. That's what they meant. They didn't like him. They were mad at him. They were jealous of him, and they wanted to kill him. And but they ended up selling him away. They were going to kill him, but they sold him. As for you, you meant evil, okay, for me, against me, but God meant it for good. In other words, God took this evil thing that you were going to do to me, and God somehow turned it and made it into good, in order to bring about the present result and to preserve many people alive. So God took this evil act, which should have been punished, okay, it was the crime, and they wanted to kill him, and then they sold him. And the cap, you know, it was like kidnapping him, and then they sold him into slavery. And so he said they should have been punished. But God meant it for good, to preserve many people alive. So therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. He spoke kindly, nicely, very sweetly. So sometimes God can take what humans mean as evil, and God can turn that through his powers and his things that he brings about. He brought Joseph to the head of Egypt to save his brothers and sisters. Now, that happened, but what happened after that? Well, Joseph was doing fine as long as the Pharaoh understood and knew Joseph. And then when Joseph died, the children of Israel then began to multiply and nobody knew Joseph anymore. You know, fame and prominence and, you know, being, high and mighty doesn't last long. And then after a while, it just, people forget it. You think you're going to be there forever? You think everybody's going to remember you forever? I'm probably not. Probably not. We all fade. I have no illusions that anybody's going to remember me very long after the people that I know now and all of them go and then their memories are gone and, you know, who's going to remember it? Evils and suffering come from natural disasters. Now, there are all kinds of natural disasters, tornadoes. We had a church member that was in Oklahoma. She had disappointment at first, and then she began to listen on regularly and be on the telesermon with Jarvis and Betty and Lorraine and Jerry and so on, and she's fellowshipping with other people. And she lived in Oklahoma, and a tornado destroyed her house and killed her. I don't know. The suffering. Tornado did it. Hurricanes. Hurricanes cause a lot of suffering. Destroy property. Some people die from it. You know, the floods and the hurricanes and the things fall down on us and so on. Certainly tidal waves, called tsunamis, or tidal waves when the ocean has an earthquake under the ocean and all this water comes flying up, tidal wave destroying people. And there was a tsunami years ago and in one of the Far East places, and people ran to there were people from our church went there to try to help out. Earthquakes. Jesus predicts earthquakes. Earthquakes in different places. Earthquakes are natural. They've been here a long time because the earth is on shelves, and we think the earth is solid, but the earth is not solid. It'll roll, it moves, it can, and when these big shelves have to, you know, break loose and come in, and there's it shudders the earth. So you have floods, you have droughts, and droughts lead to famines and sickness. So these are all natural disasters. These are things that happen in the nature that we live in, a world that is, you know, in some cases capricious. We don't know when something's going to happen. We don't get warnings for earthquakes very easily. We do get warnings for hurricanes, and people then try to get out of it. You know, down in Florida, people get pack up, and sometimes the roads are jammed to get out of an area where they think the hurricanes will be terrible. You have to have food supplies. You have to be prepared for some of these things. We live in a world. The Japanese have lived in their island, and they had a lot of earthquakes. They've had a lot of earthquakes, but they still live there. Southern California or California's had earthquakes. I've lived through three of them, the Sylmar quake, the Whittier quake, and the Northridge earthquake happened in 1994. So we have a number of things like that. While the earthquake was here, the people of Rwanda were being suffering because of the Hutus and the Tutsis and so on. Amos 1, chapter 1 talks about it. He says, the words of Amos, who was among the sheep herders from Tekoa, which he envisioned in visions concerning Israel in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, son of Josiah, the king of Israel. And he talks about at the time of the great of the earthquake. He talks about the earthquake in verse 2. He's saying it in a way, the way he's written it in Amos chapter 1, verse 2, that everybody must know that earthquake. Everybody, he's talking about at the earthquake. They must have known what he meant. Now, I'm going to talk about in our next message, I'm going to talk to you about two that I believe will be non-repeatable. They will never be repeated again. Two acts, two different stories, two different situations in which people were put to a test. And the test brought about suffering. The test itself brought about enormous suffering. I do not think these will ever be repeated again for you or for me or for any others in history. I think they're in the Bible for one reason. I'll tell you what I think that reason is in our next sermon. And I hope you will join me next week, the day before Pentecost, Okay. It'll be next week is the day before Pentecost on Sabbath. And then we'll have Pentecost services at 3 p.m. at the Open Bible Church in Rosemead. 3 p.m. You'll see it here on the screen. 3 p.m. at the Open Bible Church in Rosemead. And please be there on time or before time, because we're going to like to start services at 3 o'clock. So I'll plan to get there myself around 2:30 to between 2:30 and 3, and we'll have services there. All right. And please join me next week for part 3 of suffering, of non-repeatable acts. I believe that you'll find it very fascinating next week. Join me as we end today's services with prayer. Heavenly Father, you who made the world, you made the earth, you made the stars, you made the animals, you made the beauty of the earth. The earth is beautiful, and you've given us soil, in the richness of the soil, growing the things that we need, a beautiful apple, a beautiful pear, other things, cherry trees that look so beautiful, taste so good, and are so good for us. You have blessed us with so many things in this earth, but we know there are suffering because of evil and evil people and wrong attitudes and terrible things that people think about one another. We thank you, Father, that you will spare your people. We pray for those like Judy, like others, like Chris Melidi, like Terry Kirk, others who are suffering with disease. So many, Father, who have been bereaved, and little children like Knox and Addie Jones. We pray that you will just be merciful to them, Father, and heal them according to your wonderful will. We just ask and pray for that. We give you thanks now for everything, for all of our blessings, the very wonderful thing to be living in our country today, the United States, and wherever you are, if you're in a civilized country with protections, you should give God thanks, because bad governments can bring about tremendous suffering. So we give you thanks, Father, for everything, glorifying your holy name and thanking you for all what you've sacrificed for us in your Son, Jesus Christ. And we just pray in his name. Amen.